Good day. This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, March 27th, 2014. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. The Rotary Clubs of Northwest Arkansas are hosting Everybody Wins, End Polio Now, a carnival-styled fundraiser, April 5th at 6 p.m. at the Pauline Whitaker Horse Arena in Fayetteville. This casual event includes games, entertainment, refreshments, and music by Ultra Suede. Tickets are available at the door or through Facebook. Search Everybody Wins, End Polio Now.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, spring is officially here, and the warmer weather will soon begin to bring insects like mayflies and damselflies out and about. But before those bugs mature, they spend their young lives as nymphs in local waterways. We visit a local creek to see what is swimming and crawling beneath the surface.
Plus, a conversation with another of this year's gubernatorial candidates, Mike Ross. The Democrat has aspirations that project beyond this November. And backhand springs and lateral bars, what it takes to be one of the best gymnastics programs in the nation. We spend time with the Arkansas Razorback Gymbacks, who will host the 2014 National Championship Regionals next week.
But first, a new report commissioned by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation indicates Benton and Washington counties are the healthiest counties in the state. The 2014 County Health Rankings and Roadmaps was conducted by the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute and places Benton County as the healthiest county in Arkansas and Washington County as the second healthiest. The report considers a number of factors, including the amount of clinical care available to residents and social and economic factors. Kate Conkle, an associate researcher for the Institute, says the report shows where people live matters to their health.
And that it's not just a single thing that makes us healthy or unhealthy. It's a variety of things. Things like education, community safety, smoking, housing, diet, and exercise. And we think about it as an annual checkup for communities. You know, people go to their doctor on an annual basis, maybe to get a checkup. And so we're doing the same thing, but at a bigger level, at a community level.
The least healthy counties in the state are generally along the eastern border and along the Mississippi River. Conkle says the social economic factors in the report, such as education and crime, weigh heavier than other categories.
Because we know that things like education and income are most strongly correlated with health outcomes, both on their own, but they also contribute to, you know, people with higher incomes, with higher levels of education, often live in communities that have better schools, that have infrastructure and resources available that can, again, support those healthy choices and healthy lifestyles. So we do often see, although not always, income and education strongly correlated with better health outcomes.
Benton County was given the top ranking for length of life, healthy behavior ratings associated with exercise and alcohol use and smoking. Madison County was ranked 6th in this morning's report, while Sebastian, Franklin, and Scott counties were ranked 16th, 17th, and 18th, respectively.
The National Weather Service says there is a chance for severe weather to develop over the western half of the state today and tonight. John Robinson with the Weather Service says there are chances tonight for damaging conditions.
Especially while these storms are in western Arkansas tomorrow evening, I think they'll offer the chance of some severe weather with damaging winds and large hail and maybe a couple of tornadoes.
The forecast calls for conditions to clear for the weekend for western Arkansas, though parts of the region closer to central Arkansas may have another chance for strong thunderstorm development tomorrow night.
Friday afternoon and evening, especially in central and southern Arkansas, we'll have another round of storms, again, mainly damaging winds and large hail are going to be the severe weather threats, but we cannot rule out a couple of tornadoes.
The extended forecast shows calmer weather for the region into late next week once this current system passes through.
Another candidate for governor is unveiling a plan for cutting taxes. Curtis Coleman, who is seeking the GOP nomination in the May primary, says his plan would benefit locally owned businesses. The plan would reduce taxes paid across all income levels. The plan would also eventually reduce the number of Arkansas income brackets from 6 to 5. Coleman says his plan would cost the state nearly $2.3 billion, but be financed from increased state revenues and reduced state agency budgets. Curtis Coleman faces Asa Hutchinson in the May 20th Republican Party primary.
Some city trails and streets in Fayetteville will be closed for periods of time this weekend for the annual Hogeye Marathon and Relays. Tabby Holmes, the race director for the Hogeye, says the closures will last only for a few hours at a time.
15 miles of the course, of the marathon course, is on our Fayetteville multi-use trail system. And there are only two changes in the course this year, and they're minor. The first being the finish line is in across from the Walton Arts Center in the Walton Arts Center parking lot.
She says using trails for a majority of the course requires fewer road closures and fewer police cars directing traffic. This is the 38th year for the race that attracts runners from across the country to Northwest Arkansas. She says runners from 35 states and Canada have already registered for the relays or for the marathon.
Right now, we have about 1,500 runners. We expect, because the weather forecast is actually looking really good, crossing my fingers, we expect a lot to come in and register at the expo or even come in and register the day of the race, because we, we have those available, and, you know, I think a lot of people are, maybe they took a little bit of time off on spring break and they're waiting to see how they feel when they come back from spring break, if they went skiing or they went on a cruise or whatever. And so I expect that we'll have more people register than we usually do the day before.
The Hogeye Marathon begins Sunday morning at 7:30 on the Fayetteville Square.
The Arkansas Razorback baseball team will take a 5-game winning streak into this weekend series at Mississippi State. Last night, Arkansas shut out Mississippi Valley State 3-0 in a game played in North Little Rock. The Razorback pitching staff has allowed just 3 runs in their last 45 innings pitched. The series against Mississippi State begins tomorrow night in Starkville.
There is a 40-50% chance of rain tonight, possibly with thunderstorms. Lows in the upper 30s in northwest Arkansas tonight. Lows around 50 tonight for the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, 60% chance of rain. Again, possibly some thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow, upper 50s in northwest Arkansas. Mid-60s in the Arkansas River Valley. Friday night, 50% chance of rain. Lows from 34 to 39. And the forecast for Fayetteville Sunday for the Hogeye Marathon, sunny. Highs in the lower 70s. This is Ozarks at Large. Dozens of regional public water districts and rural water associations operate across Arkansas. One of the newest and most ambitious is the Ozark Mountain Regional Public Water Authority, now delivering Bull Shoals Lake water to towns and districts across Boone, Newton, and Searcy counties. But as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, 2 members that signed up to purchase drinking water appear to be stricken with buyer's remorse.
For generations, rural residents living in remote Ozarks communities like Deer, St. Joe, and Zinc relied on shallow wells and springs as sources of drinking water. In 2000, local authorities working with the Arkansas Natural Resources Commission considered impounding a tributary to the Buffalo National River for a regional water supply or even tapping the Arkansas River. But 5 years later, an alliance of 24 regional public water systems in Boone, Searcy, and Newton County formed the Ozark Mountain Regional Public Water Authority to draw water from Bull Shoals Lake.
You know what? We serve 22,000 people. I'd say 21,900 of those are happy.
Ozark Mountain Regional Public Water Authority Board Chairman Andy Anderson said certain local water supplies had become dangerously impaired.
Radium, uranium, and even uranium in some places, fluoride.
Causing the state health department to restrict water usage in certain small communities. Intermittent drought in recent years was also creating water insecurity. In the end, 18 signed on to the authority, which constructed a forked 120-mile-long water pipeline, complete with pump stations and storage tanks from Diamond City, north of Harrison, off Bull Shoals Lake, to as far south as Marshall to the east, and Nail Swain to the west, which just hooked up last year. The project was funded through federal and state grants and loans.
In total, about $72 million.
Of that, $62 million came from USDA, made possible by 2009 American Recovery Act stimulus funding. The Arkansas Natural Resources Commission pitched in $9.2 million in grants, plus 2 bank operating loans came through. Today, authority members owe $21.5 million in loan repayments, and if all 18 members who contracted for water service pay into the system, the loans will be paid off within 40 years.
Everybody knew that. Everybody knew they were going to be paying as much as $3.25 a thousand, and they agreed to it.
Half the collected revenue pays down the debt. The other half pays for maintenance plus two salaries. None of the board members are compensated, Anderson says. But now, the towns of Marshall in Boone County, population 1,300, and Lead Hill in Searcy County, population 271, want to disconnect from the public water supply.
What Lead Hill did is they turned off our water connection and turned their well back on.
Lawyers for Ozark Mountain Regional Public Water Authority filed a breach of contract lawsuit in Boone County Circuit Court, demanding Lead Hill pay the minimum monthly fee with interest and penalties on past due amounts. The matter was heard March 13th.
The judge ruled in that hearing that within 10 days they had to start paying the minimum, the monthly minimum, but instead of paying it to us directly, they have to pay it into the court.
Lead Hill City Council has 60 days to comply. The city mayor declined talking on record for this report. As for Marshall, again, Water Authority Board Chair Andy Anderson.
They've been using our water since August 19th and have yet to pay a penny.
The matter is also in litigation with a court date set for June 23rd. Marshall Mayor Jim Smithson says City Council voted to disconnect because the price of water is too high.
We had a public meeting along with a regular council meeting, and we had an overflow crowd in City Hall, and people had to stand outside because they didn't have room on the inside, and they were demanding that we go back to our original source of water, which was our natural spring.
That would be Hughes Springs, the town's traditional water source, which even in drought conditions, the mayor says, has ample flow. He blames the former Marshall mayor, James Busby, for railroading the town into joining the authority. And now, he said, the city of Marshall's forced to pay $29,000 per year for the lake water.
Over a 40-year period, it'd be like $13 million-plus dollars that it'll cost the city of Marshall when we've never had to purchase water before. And so this is where the water rates had to be increased in order to meet the demands of the water authority. And then the health department now has gotten involved in it, and they're saying that the spring that we used all these years, 40-something years, would not meet their requirements and regulations now.
And if Marshall taps into their traditional water source, the Arkansas Department of Health has ordered them to upgrade their water treatment system, which residents can't afford either, the mayor says. Mayor Smithson has publicly accused both the Arkansas Department of Health and State Natural Resources Commission of profiting off the Water Authority. But in a letter of response, ARNC Executive Director Randy Young says that's not true, and that the region's springs and wells are no longer reliable public water sources. Jasper Mayor Shane Kilgore, who welcomes the project, says authority members are meeting their financial obligations by adding a surcharge to water customers to distribute the water in their communities.
Our bills did go up probably $2 a thousand, which was the first water rate increase since 1993 here in the city of Jasper.
Mayor Kilgore says previously Jasper, situated in the heart of Buffalo National River Park, relied on a local aquifer, and some residents are complaining about the taste of the lake water.
I have had several issues with water quality, and I think with time, I think it will get better.
Mayor Kilgore blames old water well lines, which are adjusting to the surge of new lake water. As for the two towns, Marshall and Lead Hill, which seek to quit the Public Water Authority?
We all signed our contracts in 2009, almost 5 years ago. We knew it was coming. We knew that we needed to do things differently financially to get ourselves to where we can afford this new water system and do the little things we needed to do, work on leaks and things of that matter. Why they're deciding now, of all times, that they don't want to be on it now that it's here and running, I just don't understand that at all.
And if all members don't honor their contracts, Ozark Mountain Regional Public Water Authority Board Chair Andy Anderson says the rest of the members will be liable for the debt.
And if that happens, we still got to make the same amount of loan payment. If you cut those two people, those two systems out, you're looking at about $35,000 a month.
A cost burden that will need to be carried by the 16 remaining members. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The last day of winter was just last week, and it might not sound like the optimum time to go wading. But as it turns out, the sunny afternoon was prime for finding nymphs.
So you're going to hold this net right there.
Okay.
And a little closer to the rock, big rock. Hold it right on the ground. And I see this water's flowing through there. Let's put it right here. I'm going to lift up on the rock and sort of scrape around a little bit. Now we're going to lift it up and look and see if anything's inside. I see something.
I see some things.
Okay. We'll go put them in our enamel pan where we can, so we can see them clearly. We'll put some water in the pan, and we'll see what we have.
Our insect expert takes us hunting for aquatic bugs in Clear Creek in about half an hour on this edition of Ozarks at Large.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, we'll talk with members of the band Future Islands about their new album. They say the message is as important as the music.
We want to be that kind of band that we loved when we were kids, who's, you know, we hung on their every word.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Stay tuned to KUAF and listen to today's Here and Now. It begins next, after Ozarks at Large, here on 91.3 FM.
Mike Ross is a former congressman from the 4th District of Arkansas and a long-serving state senator. He left politics in late 2012 and quickly re-entered the field in 2013 after Attorney General Dustin McDaniel dropped out of the governor's race due to scandal. He faces an unexpected primary challenge from Democrat Lynette Bryant of Little Rock. But you get the impression from Ross's rhetoric that he's a multitasker. He told Roby Brock with our content partner Talk Business Arkansas that he is focused on the primary, the general election, and beyond.
This past Thursday, Mike Ross visited his alma mater, UALR, to tour the school's nursing program and to field questions from a class of political science students. Professor Ross is as comfortable answering questions on the Second Amendment or education as he is pressing the flesh. But he'll face a tougher assignment heading into the heat of the 2014 campaign cycle.
Let's talk about your primary. You actually got a surprise primary challenger. Lynette Bryant says she's going to run against you in the Democratic primary. First of all, how surprised were you by Lynette Bryant's entry into the race? And have you had a conversation with her since then?
I bumped into her at a couple of events. It's been a friendly conversation on both of those occasions. And look, anybody that's committed to try and make Arkansas a better place to live, work, and raise a family, I welcome them to the race. Anyone that feels called to public service, certainly they should run, and I respect that, and look forward to a campaign where I can talk about my positive vision for the future of the state.
You weren't counting on her getting in, though, obviously. You were probably expecting to be able to kind of bank some money for the general election. Maybe speak to that a little bit. And do you think that there is an expectation that if you don't win big in this primary, that it will show that there is a lack of support for your candidacy out there?
Oh, I don't. Not at all. I mean, I think that's silly. I think, the Democratic primary, Republican primary are two totally separate races from the election in November. I think you can expect, unfortunately, a relatively low turnout in both the Democratic and Republican primaries.
Ross has already taken positions on education, workforce development, and tax reform that would top $600 million in eventual commitments. But he says those won't all come at once.
Change our topics. Let's talk about tax reform. You've put out a couple of different policies. You've advocated for a manufacturing tax cut, roughly about $40 million if it were to be done in whole. You've advocated for this income tax restructuring plan, which would be about $575 million if done all at one time, which I know is not your case for doing that. But do you think you've overpromised on tax reform? I mean, could you say you're throwing too much out there that you really can't deliver on over maybe not even in a 4-year or 8-year period?
No, I think it's very comparable to what Governor Beebe proposed back in 2006. And this debate is going a lot the same way that it did in 2006. As you recall, Asa Hutchinson was running for governor in 2006. In fact, he's been running for statewide office in each of the last four decades. And in 2006, Asa Hutchinson said, we're going to get rid of the sales tax on groceries. We're going to do it all in year one. Well, we all know what happened in 2007. We had the worst economic recession since World War II. We would still be digging our way out of debt had we done that. Governor Beebe correctly said, no, we're going to get rid of the sales tax on groceries, but we're going to phase it out as the state can afford it. What I'm saying is that we need lower fair taxes. We have six state income tax brackets that determine the state income tax rate that you pay. And yet 60% of working Arkansans are in the top two brackets. One out of three are in the top bracket. How did that happen? The brackets were established in 1971. They weren't indexed for inflation. In 71, median household income was $8,000 a year. Today, still too low, $40,000 a year. We started indexing the brackets for inflation in 1997, but we never addressed that 25-year period before that, and so that's why it's so out of whack.
Do you have any other plans to offer tax reform or tax cutting proposals beyond the manufacturing tax cut you proposed, beyond the individual income tax reform you proposed?
No, that's our tax reform package, and it's more detailed than we can talk about in this interview. I would encourage people to go read my entire tax lower fair tax plan at MikeRoss.com.
Republicans have run more than $1 million in ads tying Ross to former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and unpopular President Barack Obama and the federal health care law. Ross defends his position in the health care debate that led to so-called Obamacare, and he is unwavering in his support for the bipartisan Arkansas plan known as the private option.
Let's talk about the private option, the biggest public policy debate that the state of Arkansas has really had over the past year. It's going to be a huge issue for the next governor of the state of Arkansas. You've been strongly supportive of the private option. Is there anything that gives you pause for concern about the private option? Are there things that you want to see changed? Could you see a different way of conducting that particular piece of policy?
Look, I have said since day one, and understand, I voted against Obamacare four times. I voted to repeal it 23 times. But from day one, I've said I would have voted for the Medicaid expansion, the so-called private option. I would have signed it into law, and as governor, I will protect it. Up until a few weeks ago, Asa Hutchinson's only response to the media was that he was still reading it. Well, this was not the authorization. This was the reauthorization. This was passed a year ago. And a year later, he's still reading it? Really? And then when he did make a statement, he basically said that it's the law of the land, whatever that means, and that it's nothing more than a pilot. Well, the more than 100,000 working Arkansans who now have access to health care, for our struggling rural hospitals that are barely keeping their doors open, and I understand that because we lost the hospital in my hometown back in the 90s. They don't believe this is a pilot project. And look, it's the right thing to do. It saves the state $89 million a year. It helps save our rural hospitals, and it provides health care to working Arkansans. I mean, these aren't the people that don't want to work. They already qualify for Medicaid. The Medicaid expansion or the private option are the people that are trying to do the right thing and stay off welfare, but they're working the jobs with no benefits.
You'll fight for it, though, is what you're telling me today.
Absolutely.
That you're not going to let a legislature wind it down, undo it, push it back. You see it as good public policy. You'll fight to keep it.
It is good public policy. It's good, sound fiscal policy. And it's the right thing to do.
On the road to the May primary and expectedly the path to the November general election, Ross continues his travels on the campaign trail, asking for votes and his hope on his way to the head of the class.
That was Roby Brock speaking with gubernatorial candidate Mike Ross. That conversation aired recently on KATV's Talk Business and Politics with Roby Brock. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large comes from Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. Plus AT&T, encouraging drivers to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. www.arkansasstatechamber.com for more information. And Roby Brock will continue to have more conversations with people seeking elected office in Arkansas over the coming weeks. This is Ozarks at Large. As we mentioned earlier in the program, the 2014 County Health Rankings and Roadmap Report has just been released. The report categorizes several different factors related to health for every county in the country. For Arkansas, Benton County was ranked as the healthiest county. Washington County was ranked second. The least healthy counties are mostly congregated along the Mississippi River in eastern Arkansas. This morning, I talked to Kate Kunkel, an associate researcher with the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute, about the fifth annual report issued by that institute.
We hope that the rankings are really a conversation starter for communities that, again, bring lots of different people from different areas, different sectors of the community together to talk about what's happening, what's going well. Every county, every community has things that are going well that they can continue to build on, and things that are challenges that they really need to take some time and think about. What can we do as a community, as a collective group coming together? What are those local solutions that we can put in place to improve health in our community and ensure that everyone in our community has an opportunity to live a long and healthy life?
I want to ask you about a couple of the ranking categories under physical environment. Toward the bottom of the report that people can find at countyhealthrankings.org, driving alone to work and long commute driving alone. Why were those considered, and how can those affect a county's health?
Sure. So the housing and transit measures are new to the rankings this year, both found in the physical environment. And when we think about commuting to work, people who are driving alone, it both creates social isolation. It's not great for the environment to have more people driving on their own. And it's a sedentary activity. You're sitting and not really getting any physical activity. So that contributes to our health in multiple ways. And that long commute then is, if you're driving alone and for a long period of time, it just increases all of those things. But it can also be a stressful commute for people. If they're spending long time in the car by themselves, away from their families, away from friends, not being physically active. There's lots of different things that can contribute to some negative health outcomes. So in some cases, you may not be able to change your commute patterns, but then maybe it's thinking about if I can't actively commute to work, can I actively get around my community to do other kinds of activities, other errands? So sometimes you can't change the particular factor, but you can think about if that's impacting you, how you can change other parts of your life or how communities can support people in other ways to make sure that they are getting physical activity and other healthy, beneficial activities.
5 years in now to this report, have you seen any trends for the positive or negative nationally?
We've started looking at some of those national trends, and we know that people living in the least healthy counties are twice as likely to have shorter lives as people living in the healthiest counties, which is something that we really need to think about. How do we get everyone able to live, to make choices, to live in communities where a long and healthy life is supported? We also know that there's twice as many children living in poverty in least healthy counties than in the healthiest counties. We talked about that connection to income, education, and health outcomes. That children in poverty number is one of our key measures that we really want people to focus in on and think about. How do we make sure that, again, everyone has access, that people have an opportunity to raise healthy families? And then finally, we also know that while teen birth rates have decreased about 25% since 2007, there are still twice as many teen births in the least healthy counties compared to the healthiest. And so, again, we really want people to think about raising all boats and making sure that everyone has the same opportunities regardless of where they live. We know that zip code really impacts health, and we want to make sure that everyone, regardless of their zip code, regardless of their neighborhood, has the same opportunities to be healthy.
Kate Kunkel is an associate researcher with the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. The fifth annual County Health Rankings and Roadmap was released by the Institute this morning and was commissioned by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. You can see the report, including a county-by-county breakdown of Arkansas, at countyhealthrankings.org.
On this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, President Obama has had enough. That's it, he said to Vladimir Putin. You cannot be in our club. The G8 is now the G7. The remaining members are not telling Russia the password, the secret knock, and not sharing the 10% discount at participating Red Lobsters. But I, Mike Pesca, filling in for Peter Sagal this week, do invite you to join us on the news quiz from NPR.
That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Saturday morning at 9 on KUAF.
While many college students are away on vacation, the Razorback gymnastics team has been hard at work in Fayetteville preparing to compete in and host an NCAA regional championship next week. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda spent some time with the team earlier this week and has this report.
Last weekend, the Razorback gymnastics team traveled to Birmingham, Alabama to compete in the Southeastern Conference Championship. The team finished seventh before heading back to Fayetteville. Tuesday afternoon, the team met for the second time that day to practice at the Huntley Gymnastics Training Facility, which is located inside the Bev Lewis Center for Women's Athletics on the University of Arkansas campus. Co-head coach Mark Cook gave instructions to a couple of the young athletes preparing to work on the high bars.
So you guys know if I feel the handstand's really insufficient, we will stop, that pass will not count, and we'll start our six in a row with the next person up. You need
high
to get the handstands.
While a handful of girls took turns swinging around the bars, their teammates switched the height of the bars in between sets to compensate for the athletes' height differences and yelled words of encouragement. While the young athletes looked serious about training for the upcoming NCAA regional championship, they still managed to have some fun by blasting pop songs over their speakers and practicing a gymnastics version of the Arkansas Fight song. In 2001, Mark Cook, along with the Razorbacks' co-head coach Renee List, came to Arkansas from Stanford to build a gymnastics program from the ground up. Arkansas's first team, an all-freshman lineup in 2003, finished its inaugural season ranked 41st in the nation. During the past decade, the team has earned two NCAA regional titles and made seven appearances at the NCAA championships. Co-head coach Renee List says while building a program from scratch hasn't been easy, it has been a worthwhile endeavor.
Well, it's a lot of work. It's quite adventurous, but it's absolutely completely rewarding to know that everything that's transpired is because of your vision, your hard work, obviously the personnel, you know, you've brought in to help you achieve the goals, and just it's just obviously a lot of pride to know how much you've, you know, been able to affect the institution, the community, the sport, young people's lives, you know, that get to come here and go to school and graduate and move on and have families and be successful in the world. So it's an absolutely unbelievable experience.
One of those young athletes List has worked with during the past 4 years is Catherine Grable. The senior from Oshkosh, Wisconsin, says one of the factors in her decision to come to the University of Arkansas was the program's unbelievable facility. According to the university, at nearly 15,000 square feet, the training facility is one of the largest in the nation. Located on the first floor of the Bev Lewis Center, it includes three vault runways, a foam pit, three bar workstations, five beam stations, and a full-size 40-foot by 40-foot floor exercise area. The training area is also equipped with a couple of cameras and televisions where the gymnasts can watch their performances. Grable says her mom didn't know what to do with her as a child because she was constantly running around. when she was about 2 years old. Grable's mom enrolled her in gymnastics. Grable says while she participated in other sports, gymnastics was the sport that stuck.
I did dance for a while, and I did soccer till I was in middle school. And I think it was just gymnastics just came easier to me, and I just really loved, I guess, everything about it, the competition and, you know, learning new skills, because there's just so many things that you can learn in gymnastics. And I think in other sports, there's usually just like kind of like there's like a set of things that you learn to be successful in other sports, and in gymnastics you can learn a million different things and it never stops.
Grable says growing up there were several competitive clubs in Wisconsin and the surrounding states, so she had a lot of opportunities. Grable says she was lucky that the gym she trained in was only about 5 minutes from her house. She had the same coaches from the time she started gymnastics until she graduated high school and moved to Arkansas. Those coaches have recently retired, but they came and watched Grable during a meet in Nebraska this season, which she says was an unbelievable experience. During meets, athletes can participate in four different areas of competition: floor exercise, vault, balance beam, and high bars. Grable is one of two girls on the 14-member squad who competes in all four disciplines.
I mean, I've competed all around. Like in club, you're supposed to, or you compete all around. That's just, you do all four events. And so I'm really used to doing that. And I try to, every day, if I'm, I don't know, struggling on something, I try to make all my events just as strong as the others. And I don't think I definitely wouldn't prefer to not compete all around, because that's what I've been doing for so long, and it's just kind of natural for me to do all four events.
Grable will graduate in May and hopes to one day coach college gymnastics. As the semester progresses, her time as a Razorback is drawing to a close, but it's been a pretty successful career. Early in the season, Grable was featured as the number one overall gymnast in the country. The senior All-American broke the program record in the all-around competition at the SEC Championship last week and has been named SEC Gymnast of the Year.
I mean, it's been really fun the past 4 years. It definitely went way faster than I wanted it to, but I accomplished so many things that I don't even think I would have thought were possible as a freshman. So looking back on it, I'm definitely more than happy to be a part of all the success that's happened.
Because these athletes are also students, they have to balance training with academics. Co-head coach Renee List says these girls have busy schedules. During the long preseason, they train 5 days a week. Once they're in season, List says they train much less, but it's a much busier time for the athletes.
Things go quick. We're in, we're out of town, we're, you know, having a meet, we're recovering. It's a different flow once season starts. So it's a little bit more fluid once we start season. But pretty much I would say in season, we're doing something for gymnastics almost every single day. There's really no downtime because you're just focused on the next challenge. So it is a full-time commitment. Obviously, athletically, academically, they do a lot of stuff in the community, which takes up a lot of their time. You know, they're fortunate. They have a lot of support services to help them with academics, but that also is a lot of time commitment with tutoring and study hall and those types of things. So they don't... They have fun, but they definitely have a full bracket of stuff they have to do every day.
Right now, the team is focusing on hosting the NCAA Fayetteville Regional next Saturday. There are six regionals overall, and teams must place in the top two spots at a regional competition if they want to advance to nationals.
You know, we've done well this year. We are a strong team. I'm not really sure we've reached our potential to where we can, and that's what our goal is for regionals, is just tapping out all of our potential, focusing on these next 2 weeks, just really honing in everything and putting everything into what we're doing to really come out and come into Barn Hill and just rock it. And so far, you know, the mindset's been great. The intensity's been great. I know everyone has a lot of desire and passion, and just really excited about being home for regionals and hosting such a great event on our campus.
The meet is slated to start at 4 p.m. April 5th at Barnhill Arena. More information is available at ArkansasRazorbacks.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It is Thursday, March 27th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Dangerously close to April.
Ooh, you're right.
A little too close for comfort, I bet, for Becca.
Yes, it is.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor of Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, is with us.
It's also dangerously close to the end of spring break, so this is our last installment of Spring Break Destinations.
But if you started spring break right now, you've got a four-day weekend.
True.
So,
and I saved this stop for that particular reason, because it's Little Rock.
Ah, one of the best things you can do when you don't have a lot of time is go to Little Rock and act like you're a tourist there.
Absolutely.
Because I think a lot of people from this area will go to Little Rock, but they don't think of themselves as a tourist. They think of themselves as out of town, mm-hmm. which is different.
Well, you go for a specific reason, usually.
Right.
It's not to go
down
just to
and
hang
up,
out.
A yeah. meeting or something. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to do there.
And, of course, since we were planning for kids, the reporter who did this installment in What's Up chose the Museum of Discovery.
Which is very cool.
90 permanent Discovery stations, and PBS's Sid the Science Kid is there today and tomorrow. I don't know who Sid the Science Kid is, but I believe
that it's
cool.
Sounds like a good place for him, Sid, to be.
Activities inside the museum, of course, are science-related. Math, science, physics, and a place called Tornado Alley, mm-hmm. which I really want to see. Have you done this?
I have.
Is
yes.
it cool?
It is. I've managed to hit this museum twice when it was their Super Insect Weekend, which was a lot of fun. Cockroach races and recipes with insects.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, they say that this week, because of spring break, they will have live animals on display, including cockroaches, snakes, hedgehogs, and ferrets.
Hedgehogs.
I love hedgehogs.
And ferrets,
that's right.
And no lions, tigers, or bears. But you can see those at the Little Rock Zoo, or you can visit the Clinton Presidential Library, where the exhibit is on presidential pets.
Ah, fitting.
Yeah. Socks.
One assumes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would have, yeah.
So enjoy the rest of your spring break, and we'll be back tomorrow with more to get you through the work week.
All right.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Down at a tributary flowing into Clear Creek just off Highway 112 in northwest Fayetteville. Green algae and rocks of various shapes and sizes are easily seen. But below the surface, underneath those rocks and amid the plants and algae, what cannot be so easily seen are the aquatic bugs and insects that call this creek home. On the final day of winter, our Ozarks at Large insect expert, Dr. Donald Steinkraus, took me wading into Clear Creek in search of insects that were scurrying along the creek bed or clinging to its rocks. Dr. Steinkraus was prepared with our entomologist tools for the expedition.
This is our collecting tool. This is an aquatic net. You can see it's very robust. It's got this big brass rim, and it's flat on the bottom. And what people do with these things is stick them in the stream and then sort of kick some rocks upstream a little bit so the current will carry the invertebrates into the net. And then we can put them in an enamel pan and take a look at them and see what we have.
This net is more durable than tools we have used in the past to catch butterflies or grasshoppers in tall grass, sturdy enough to drag across the bottom of the creek. Water insects are a very important part of the ecosystem of a stream, feeding the fish, and the fish then feeding birds such as herons or kingfishers.
A healthy stream will be packed with many invertebrates, no matter the season.
Almost all of them have, or a lot of them, I should say, have year-round life cycles. So it takes them a year at least from the time the egg hatches to the time an adult comes out. That's true of many of them. And some even have longer life cycles. Some of the big dragonflies, you know, there's a lot of different types. We'll try to find some and talk about them.
Many of the insects we find are in the nymph stage, the portion of life when an invertebrate is immature before transitioning into adulthood. We find a small rock island in the middle of Clear Creek to leave our enamel pan as we wade through the depths until we find a large rock about a foot deep.
So you're going to hold this net right there.
Okay.
And a little closer to the rock, this big rock. Hold it right on the ground. And I see this water's flowing through there. Let's put it right here. I'm going to lift up on the rock and sort of scrape around a little bit. Now we're going to lift it up and look and see if anything's inside. I see something.
I see some things.
Okay. We'll go put them in our enamel pan so we can see them clearly. We'll put some water in the pan, and we'll see what we have. This is a nice stream.
Placing water in the pan not only makes the insects easier to see, but also allows them to stay alive until they are poured back into their creek. Amid leaves and sludge are very small insects, some hiding, others scurrying. The guy we find has flattened legs and three projections from its hindquarters. To Dr. Steinkraus, it looks like a mayfly nymph, which will turn into a mayfly in a short while.
These things are important ecologically because mayflies are a really major food for trout and other fish, and also for birds. And so it has a larval stage which lives in the water and feeds on detritus and helps break down leaves and other material. And then the adult will emerge and fly for a day or two and mate and lay eggs.
Dr. Steinkraus picks up part of a leaf and points out that it is the type of thing that nymphs would eat. We leave the first catch in the pan and wade into swifter waters for our second catch. Though not much to the naked eye, if taken back to the lab and examined under a microscope, these specimens would be beautiful. Next in our net is a damselfly nymph, the sister suborder to dragonflies.
As you see them often when you're out in the summertime on a boat, and they have those little delicate wings, forewings, and long, narrow bodies. A lot of them are sort of bluish in their body. You remember seeing those? So that's a damselfly nymph. And they are strictly predators. The damselflies and dragonflies are always predaceous, eating other insects and animals all their lives as larvae or nymphs and also as adults.
As Steinkraus holds the damselfly, it acts sort of like a scorpion, arching its tail as if to look fierce. Their mandible is built with a very strange underjaw. They wait for their prey and shoot their jaw out very fast, bringing the prey back to their mouth to chew up. The damselfly is part of this whole ecosystem, serving as food for fish. Some aquatic insects like to cling under rocks for safety.
So just looking at rocks is sometimes helpful. See, there's a, what is that?
The mayfly.
That's right. Very good. You're a fast learner. Now this looks like something interesting. See something there?
Mm-hmm. Almost like a slug or something, maybe?
Very good. You're observant. Oh, I dropped it. Well, that's what they call a water penny. It's a little larval stage of a coleopter and a beetle.
If you're very flat and cling to a rock, as the water penny does, you won't be washed away by the water. He says other insects swim, some burrow, but they are all out there trying to live, no matter the habitat. He says most aquatic insects are searching for oxygen and have gills on them to get that oxygen. One of the first things that can kill a water bug, say if the creek were to become polluted, would be a lack of oxygen. Something like the Mayflower oil spill could kill all of the insects in Clear Creek, in addition to many other creatures, potentially taking decades for them to return. Dr. Steinkraus is very concerned about the fate of our rivers and streams, as oil spills in Texas and California and the coal contamination in Virginia have made recent news.
I was looking at the articles, and the articles all deal with, well, what's the effect on humans, and what's it going to cost, and who's to blame, but almost none of them mention what the effect is on the wildlife, and the insects are very susceptible to poisoning. So,
on the final day of winter, we did not come across the insects that he expected to find. Perhaps the cold and especially icy winter had sent them to other habitats. But spring is here, and as the weather warms, the insects, just as we people do, will begin to come out and enter different parts of their life cycle. I'll return to Clear Creek this summer in the hopes of seeing some bugs that spend their entire lives in or on the water, and perhaps see the aerial adults of these nymphs we found on today's visit. Dr. Donald Steinkraus is an entomologist at the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large.
I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night from 10 till midnight. That's Terrence Blanchard in the background. This Friday on the show, we'll hear music from Terrence, also from Hank Mobley, Catherine Russell, Oscar Peterson, Mike Garson, and much more. That's Shades of Jazz, this Friday at 10 p.m.
KUAF Night with the Naturals will be April 24th at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. KUAF ticket holders will be seated together and an on-field photo will be taken of our group. A portion of ticket sales will benefit KUAF. KUAF tickets are only available by calling 927-4063 or click the banner at KUAF.com to email an order.
So we're going to have a lot of KUAF listeners at Arvest Ballpark on April 24th. I hope so. I hope. Wouldn't it be fun if we had 200 or 300 people there?
That would be awesome. Yeah. I mean, with the whole section.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be great.
Right.
Yeah.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Eureka Springs.
Yes.
Because it's spring break for most people.
It is spring break for most
Not
people.
Not for us. But
well, and convenient.
Yes.
There's. I have something to talk about that's happening tonight in Eureka Springs.
It's like we had this planned, and we didn't.
But we didn't, no. Well, it's Taco Thursday at the Squid and the Whale on Spring Street in Eureka Springs.
Yes. And will they have musical accompaniment?
They will. They will indeed. It's also pie night, so you can get there's a selection of homemade pies. Oh. But they will have music accompaniment provided by Sweetwater Gypsies. They're a music trio, a folk trio, bluegrass trio that I came across. And I really hope to get them in the studio because I really liked this song.
All right. So people listening in Eureka Springs, tell the Sweetwater Gypsies we want them to come here.
We do. So this is their song, Throwing Stones. Yeah.
All right. Enjoy your tacos, your pie, and your spring break tonight.
Right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
You'll be back tomorrow with Antoinette.
Yes.
All right. Until then, have a good Thursday.
Well, I got